few places can evoke a sense of awe as grand, in my eyes, as the Rocky Mountains. From the sheer scale of these vast stony structures to the serenity of a rushing waterfall transitioning to a calm creek, there's an unmatched sense of discovery down every hike or climb. That's one of the many reasons why I joined this podcast, to learn more about systems like these and deliver it right to your ears. I'm Eric Tanner, and you're listening to the Canadian Mountain Podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about water quality and security in the Canadian Mountains. To examine this, I'll be talking to three experts from the Canadian Mountain Network and exploring what their research looks like. But before we begin, I'd like to take a moment to appreciate the land we work on and the people we work with. The Canadian Mountain Podcast acknowledges that our conversations engage with diverse knowledge holders who live and work on unceded and treated lands. We also recognize the historical and ongoing oppression that many Indigenous cultures, lands, and nations have continuously faced within Canada. This podcast actively seeks to decolonize, change, and inspire media platforms by including Indigenous ways of knowing. Of water quality and security is often one that is overlooked. Without so much as a second thought, many Canadians can fill a glass with crisp, potable water from a household tap whenever they choose. Despite this, most of our country's most substantial sources of sustainable water stem from glacial runoff and mountain headwaters. These same waters are also being threatened by the irreversible impacts of human-evoked pollution and climate change. As the quality of these sources continues to dwindle, communities ranging from sparsely populated mountain towns to major cities will start to feel the impacts. That's why, on this episode of the Canadian Mountain Podcast, we will be discussing the significance of our nation's water quality and security, as well as the future repercussions these two factors could have on the wildlife, ecosystems, and communities across the nation. Our first guest is Elliot Fox, a member of the Kainai Nation Blood Tribe and an independent consultant for the Blackfoot Guardianship of East Slope Watersheds.
So I just said, hello, friends. I gave my Blackfoot name, which translates to wolf caller. So it's the name of an old, I guess, healer or medicine man, and that was his name. So I was given that to me by one of our late elders, and so that's my current Blackfoot name.
Also joining us is Matt Coombs, a fisheries biologist and consultant for Fintegate Fisheries and Watershed Consulting, working in collaboration with the Blackfoot Guardianship of East Slope Watersheds.
So my name is Matt Coombs. I'm a fisheries biologist and I'm a consultant as well. I operate Fintegate Fisheries and Watershed Consulting Limited, and I'm based in the Crow's Nest Pass, which is part of the Blackfoot Territory.
Our final guest is Dr. Vincent St. Louis.
Hi, I'm Vincent St. Louis. I'm a professor at the University of Alberta.
I met up virtually with Elliot, Matt, and Vincent to discuss their personal work and experiences surrounding water quality in the mountains, as well as their outlook towards the future of Canada's water security. So the first question I'm going to ask is for all three of you. In your own brief definition or summary, how would you describe mountain headwaters for those who are unfamiliar with the term?
I guess maybe I'll take an initial go at that. In places like the eastern slopes here in Alberta, the headwaters really refer to waters that originate in glaciated areas. In places like Alberta, in higher elevations in the mountains, it's typically cold enough that you can retain ice for throughout the year. It doesn't all melt. So things like glaciers grow during the winter, typically when there's snowfall, and over time that snow becomes ice. And as long as there's more snowfall in the winter and ice accumulation than melt in the summer, the glaciers tend to grow.
Yeah, I'll take a stab at that question as well, and just speak to watersheds in a more general sense as being the area of land where the rain and snow melts and all drains to a common stream or river. And so headwaters are the highest elevation part of a watershed. So they're at the top of the watershed, and higher elevation areas like mountains will intercept more precipitation. So mountains receive more rain and snow because they're way up there in the clouds. And as the wind brings the clouds into the mountains, that precipitation falls. And because they're steep and covered in rocks, there's a lot of runoff from those mountainous areas. And that would be more runoff than there would be in flatter areas like the Canadian prairies.
Hi. Yeah, this is Elliot. Yeah, great definitions by Matt and Vincent of the definition of headwaters. So mine's pretty brief. Like in the Rocky Mountains and here in southern Alberta, where I've lived all my life, and it's we depend on water from the Rocky Mountains, which are probably about a half hour west from where I live near Cardston, Alberta. So our community has been, and I guess traditionally the Blackfoot people, water is very sacred. And we obviously all depend on water for life. So to me, headwater streams, mountain headwater streams, or headwaters are one of the primary sources for water that flows downstream and is needed by flora, fauna, and humans to survive.
Thank you for that. And now moving on to Elliot and Matt. So could one or both of you please tell our listeners a little bit about the Blackfoot Guardianship of East Slope Watershed Hub and some of their projects?
Sure. So the East Slopes are Blackfoot territory, and water is an integral part of Blackfoot culture that's been memorialized in ceremony, songs, and artifacts passed down through the generations. And the project, the Blackfoot Guardianship of East Slopes Watersheds, is a knowledge hub through the Canadian Mountain Network, and it's focused on three interconnected areas, which are governance, aquatics, and weaving Blackfoot knowledge, ways of knowing, with scientific knowledge systems. So the goal of the hub is to develop the Blackfoot Nation's capacity to play a role in the guardianship of the East Slopes.
Yeah, Matt nailed it pretty good. I just want to add the mountains for the Blackfoot people are part of our traditional territory. So we still use a lot of that water, like I said, in our spiritual and ceremonial customs and practices. We've obviously used this water and needed it for millennia. And so now, I guess with the increase in the human population in this part of the continent, there's more, obviously more of a demand on that water. And so, so we're gonna try to respectfully weave traditional Blackfoot knowledge and Western science to try to sustain that important water for the future. So hopefully we can share some of that knowledge with the public. Yeah, so that's about all I've got.
Mm-hmm. For whoever wishes to answer this one, why is understanding our water systems and mountain headwaters so important?
Well, water is obviously essential for life, and the mountain headwaters are a source of the water, and people living on the prairies are very dependent on the water from the east slopes. And we know historically and from current records that water supply has varied a lot, not just seasonally, but from year to year. And there have been some very significant droughts in the past. And so human population has grown rapidly over the last 100, 150 years. And so if droughts to the scale of droughts that have happened even in the past were to happen again, there would be some significant challenges. So understanding how best to manage the land and the water that comes from the land is going to become increasingly important. And together with that, the biodiversity is an integral component of the landscape. And this crown of the continent landscape, or the east slopes, has supported a lot of biodiversity for millennia, and it continues to support a lot of biodiversity that's been lost in other parts of North America. There are still populations of fish and wildlife species that are still persisting in these headwater environments. So it's really important to understand the interdependence of the watershed processes and the needs of these species at risk.
Yeah, I'll just add, well, to me, understanding our water systems and that headwaters, you know, why is that so important? Well, I think generally to ensure water quality and quantity in the headwaters of the eastern slopes is sustained for the future. And so I think if a bigger part of our population can gains a better understanding of ensuring that we have, you know, high water quality and quantity in the future. And yeah, with all of the current things going on in the world with climate warming, global warming, climate change. Now there's this COVID pandemic. We're getting way more intense fires than we did historically. Yeah, so it's really important that our population understands the importance of these water systems.
Yeah, Matt and Elliot said it wonderfully. And the only thing I would add is that, you know, one of my biggest concerns is with climate change and, driven by human activities and population growth. My biggest concern is that these water sources, these glacial water sources for these rivers, could very easily disappear over the next 100 years or so. If we lose our glaciers, we'll actually lose our water source as we kind of know it. For example, water flow will be, consistent throughout the summer because it originates from melt in the glaciers, keeping in mind what Matt already said, that some years we do have droughts and, things have dried up. But from that perspective, it's pretty important. If we have no water, we don't have to worry about water quality per se. We really do have to worry about the source of the water and the quality of that to sustain what's, we currently use the water for.
What is, what to you personally seems to be the most timely issue currently facing water quality and security in the mountain headwaters?
Well, I would say global warming and climate change and increasing human use and development near headwater streams. And, as I mentioned, and Matt and Vince, I think also alluded to that, was you know, our population is the largest it's been on the planet in history. And, you know, obviously humans have had an impact with fossil fuels and, you know, those, and it's all contributed to global warming. And we're seeing it now more so than ever.
Yeah, I would say I would sum it up as just cumulative effects. So the consumptive use of resources on the East Slopes has really increased rapidly, exponentially, with agricultural and industrial development and the growth of the human population. And the resources of mountain headwaters are finite, and so is the resilience of the landscape to disturbance caused by resource extraction. So then when you add that climate variability on top of the cumulative effects of the land use, that can have a really significant impact. So we could start reaching the limits of some ecological thresholds or limits, both in terms of what species at risk can handle, but also in terms of what we need in terms of the ecological goods and services that we get from the mountain headwater areas. So we may face, as we have already faced, times when basically run out of water in some of the systems that are already over allocated, and there's over 100% of the water in some of the rivers in southern Alberta is allocated. So if everybody took their allocation of water, there would be no water left in the river in some years. So I think we're going to see that the natural resources coming from the East Slopes are going to become increasingly limited, and the use of those resources is going to become increasingly regulated by government as they become more and more scarce.
Yeah, I think Matt and Elliot said it very eloquently. I don't have much to add, but really want to agree with Matt that cumulative impacts are another major issue that we constantly need to deal with when we're talking about our water resources, especially with continued population growth and industrial activities along our water resources.
What are some of the impacts that water quality and security has on local communities?
Yeah, so some of the impacts water quality and security has on local communities. We need water to survive, so we need clean drinking water. And then, you know, like Matt and Vince alluded to, cumulative effects. So there's certainly more pressure, more demand for that water.
I had a bit of a different perspective on that, in just that the impacts on water quality and security may not be as apparent to communities that are living close to the headwaters or are in areas where lack of water. Many of the communities live on rivers that are relatively large, and, you know, boil water advisories may have happened occasionally, but they're relatively rare. But I think as you move further away from the headwaters, or you're on smaller streams or in smaller communities, or maybe you're just a rancher, the importance of water and the threat of water scarcity becomes more of a big issue. A lot of the urban areas are on large rivers, and you know, their water may seem fairly secure, but it's some of the more smaller communities or more remote communities where they're depending on smaller water sources, where there could be reduced security.
Yeah, I really appreciate the comments of especially Elliot and Matt, because I live in Edmonton and I don't always understand the challenges of some of the smaller communities or farmers that live along some of these water resources that originate in the eastern slope. So, you know, I live in a city where we have good water treatment. We don't need to, you know, really worry about that. And I also live in a region where I don't actually need to get, for example, fish sustenance or other food resources from the landscape. So I think that's all very, very important to keep in mind when we're talking about our water resources and how they impact communities. And, you know, Elliot's voice is, you know, his the people he lives with, for example. It's all very, very important for us to understand fully these types, how these water resources impact their communities.
So for Matt and Elliot, how has the pandemic made the issues surrounding water quality and water security worse for these Indigenous communities?
I think overall there's been a lot of focus on COVID-19 right now, and so other issues relating to water quality and security are probably receiving less attention than they would have otherwise. They may have been projects that have been deferred related to that type of work that just aren't proceeding right now.
Yeah, I guess I'll just add, you know, with the pandemic that's, you know, happening globally, it's requiring more funding. So yeah, what's gonna happen if the pandemic continues to the funding sources, right? Because there's a real big impact or a big demand on funding, more so with this pandemic than prior. So you know, what happens when the funding runs out or gets lower? You know, that will definitely have an impact.
And from just a very scientific view on COVID, I know some of the basic monitoring has been scaled back a little bit due to regulations surrounding working in groups and things like that, you know, restrictions on going out and doing some field work. So some of the monitoring of these mountain systems, for example, has been scaled back a little bit, but I don't think it's going to overly jeopardize our long-term records of some of these systems.
And so as we go forward and just try and wrap this all up, my question directed towards all of you is, what future changes and innovations need to be made to help allow all individuals to obtain an acceptable level of water quality and security?
I'll add to that. So highly sensitive areas like mountain headwaters on the east slopes, they need to be prioritized as sources of water. They're providing water security. They need to be prioritized over extractive industries or damaging recreational activities that threaten those water source areas. So there's already a lot of legislation that's in place to protect water source areas, but that legislation isn't always necessarily being upheld or enforced. So I think that increased implementation of existing legislation protecting the water source areas on the east slopes would be important. And then any innovations that can reduce the need for extractive use of natural resources and lessen the impacts of the existing land uses that are happening on the east slopes. And that would also be a real benefit to improving both water security and water quality.
Yeah, I would just add, you know, I totally agree with Matt. And just working on this native trout recovery project for the past couple of years, that's led by the Blackfoot Confederacy. It's funded by Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. And we've got Alberta as a partner working with the University of Victoria Lab. So Matt and I have been out a lot in the past year. seeing the landscape. And I couldn't believe, because I haven't gone to some of these areas that we're visiting in the Bow River and the Old Man River watersheds. So I've saw some of these streams and some of these places for the first time in my life. And, you know, some of them are amazing, you know, amazing scenery. We're finding bull trout in a lot of the streams we're surveying. We're finding some cutthroat trout. But like Matt said, you know, seeing, you know, the multiple human use on the landscape out there. So a lot of it is damaged. So I agree with Matt, you know, the governments have to prioritize these areas because those are finite resources in those watersheds that they're extracting and using with recreational coal mining, cattle grazing in those headwater streams, random camping, logging, you know, it's all having a cumulative effect. So, I believe the government's got to draw the line. Like, we've only got so much here. We got to, you know, save some of this for the future. I've got two grandkids now. So I really wonder how their life is going to be when they grow older and I'm not here anymore, right? There's got to be they got to draw a line. Like, how much use is too much? And again, it's important to educate the public about the importance of these areas and sustaining and not using some of those areas. It's good that we have some protected areas around us where that kind of development is prohibited. That's what I would mention.
Elliot, what you just said is really important, especially given, I would say, the somewhat bad history that Parks Canada, for example, has had with Indigenous people from the very start of the making of the national parks. I think it is really important to reestablish some of that, some of the original Indigenous names and things like that. And I also just want to add before we go that it's been a real honor listening to Elliot today and Matt as well. I look forward to working with them in the future as we sort of conclude our Mountain Network funding. And yeah, I think they have a lot of wisdom to add to our study.
That was Elliot Fox, Matt Coombs, and Vincent St. Louis, three researchers working to help improve our country's water quality and security through a mixture of Indigenous and Western research methods and practices. The three hope to further collaborate surrounding Canada's water quality and security, heightening awareness of the issue and continuing their fight for renewable and sustainable practices. Thank you to our guests! And we hope to continue our discussions of water quality and security and why these pressing matters deserve our attention. That's it for this edition of the Canadian Mountain Podcast in partnership with Mount Royal University. Thank you for tuning in to this new season. This podcast was produced from Treaty 7 territories, a place that holds generations of culture and stories. With the Canadian Mountain Podcast, our goal is to share both Indigenous knowledge and settler perspectives, and we give appreciation to those stories. We are committed to collaborating with Indigenous peoples through storytelling and partnerships. Therefore, we acknowledge the hereditary keepers of these lands, the Nitsitsapi Blackfoot, the Iyahe Nakotabi, Stony Nakota, Sutina, and Métis peoples. I'm Eric Tanner. And special thanks to show producer Gabrielle Piska. Be sure to join us again for more stories surrounding mountain places, whether that be in your own backyard or across the country. Share and subscribe to get the latest updates on the new season. And be sure to tell your mountain-loving friends and colleagues. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts, and you can learn more about the Canadian Mountain Network at canadianmountainnetwork.ca.